You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene
Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Bing is for doing, and we are doing another AfterBuzz TV podcast of Mad Men Season 5, Episode 8, titled Dark Shadows. I'm your host, John Comerford. I'm joined on the panel by the lovely and talented Kat Tulich.
Hello.
To my right is the co-creator of AfterBuzz, Kevin Undergaro.
Hello. Kevin from L.A. Times.
From L.A. Times. I'm sorry I didn't give you the bona fides. Beg your pardon. In our booth, we have Phil Zvitek, producer extraordinaire.
Welcome, everyone.
And rounding out the panel, Josh Gardner.
How's it going?
So tonight we have, Pete has a fling, so to speak, with Beth. Dawn decides to leave something behind. We have Roger wooing the Manischewitz. Megan goes toe-to-toe with Sally. Let's start off with Betty and her Weight Watchers extravaganza.
Oh, I love this because I could relate because I first went to Weight Watchers when I was 13 when it was really archaic like that. They made you eat liver once a week. It was pretty bad.
Oh, goodness.
I actually have the personalized scale at home and she's counting out cheese cubes.
I've done that. And the grapefruit because
the grapefruit and the burnt toast.
Because you have to dry toast.
You have dry toast, but why burnt toast? Is that so you don't even eat the bread?
Okay, here I am as the symbolism whore. but hell. Well, and all the talk about
the
hell.
Devil
and
all
so you've got it burnt. And, you know, particularly for what's stuck out to me was just the drab colors of her world in that house.
Mm-hmm. And everything was dark.
Dark.
And the
very
fact that she was eating this food all at night. It was always at some form of either early morning or late
at
night.
Yeah, it was not in the... There's kind of shame attached to it.
Exactly.
Because I don't want to do this in the light of day in front of everybody. that's what I was going with that. Yeah.
But it must have been quite revolutionary then, just talking about Weight Watchers, the way they sort of got them confessional, they're talking about their week. I mean, this must have been like the actual origins of now that this multi-million dollar industry of weight loss, this is kind of the start of it.
You know, it's 1966, okay? So jumping ahead, we see it in the Toronado, which was a revolutionary car that came out. Yeah. We heard last week a Beatles song from Revolver album 1966, but this to me was the ending of the 50s really, and the beginning of the ending of Camelot, let's say early 60s, and beginning which was going to be like the late 60s and the 70s and just really a big revolutionary change and so it's interesting to see. Where Weight Watchers, archaic as you say, it was not just about calories. They were getting into the psychology.
Exactly.
That was the revolutionary part.
I love that at this point, it's almost like an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting.
Yes, exactly.
At this time.
But progressive for the time because it wasn't just about eating less or counting calories.
Yes.
And also tying food to the emotional thing because, you know, I mean, especially the whole Betty story in the sense, I mean, you know, the fact that she's now overweight. I find that a kind of a stretch being someone that was so vain and such a model, but I think the way that we can believe it is because of the emotional issues that she's having in her life. And
well, how about the wonderful composition of the shot when she sees Megan? Is the shot
right,
after
one at a time?
That.
Yeah. We get a lot of criticism for talking over each other.
She has to pick up the kids. Obviously, and she sneaks the view through the, and she sees Megan putting on the shirt. So she sees the young, lean body compared to hers, and then the shot afterwards with the two of them, either side of the sliding glass door and the outfits and everything.
Yeah, John, going to every element, or everyone chime in, because there was so much
we
there.
We saw her,
yeah,
you know, okay, Betty's wearing the coat, she's got the scarf, she's really covered up, and the old-looking, well, comparatively speaking.
Right, the housewife.
Absolutely. That it's almost like a house coat. I mean, it's not a house coat, but you just kind of, just really bulky and thick and heavy.
The last of the June Cleavers.
Exactly, and then you see Megan, and Megan, by the way, Betty's in a dress. Mm-hmm. Megan's in slacks and a top, very colorful, very mod, very hip.
Yeah, and Betty's in such a plain,
yeah,
fairly large coat
it's
and dress,
brownish gray look.
And you notice before she even goes into the apartment, she looks at the
checks herself in the mirror
in the hallway and kind of presses herself down. So like, okay, I'm okay, and walks in and immediately sees Megan.
No, it's like June Cleaver against Tyler Moore.
Terrible. And then you see the two of them there, and you say, just chasm between them.
But, I mean, how old do we think Betty is at this point? She's probably only, in her mid-30s?
Yeah.
I know she's still the younger woman. But
No. But as we've discussed, you were
back
old.
Then, yeah,
back then,
30s,
you're old. That's
yeah.
what I'm just saying. It's so interesting that at this sort of she's got this matronly look, you know, and it's interesting that, you know, that...
They really heaped it on there.
Wow.
And seeing Megan change.
Oh, yeah. Megan.
Seeing Megan naked and how thin.
And how she's not anymore. See, that used to be that. Which spurred her on to do all the other stuff that she did, because going into the enemy's territory, you know. And she even talked about that in the next Weight Watcher thing. It's been a bad week for me. I had to go someplace I didn't really want to go.
And then, of course, her little release when she got home and ran to the kitchen to grab the Ready Whip.
Yeah, the Ready Whip.
Quick
exactly.
shot in the mouth and spit it out in the sink.
Exactly. Caught yourself. How many times have anybody done that?
I thought it was interesting.
I've never spit it out in the
sink. Yeah, exactly.
A couple of the food shots in this were interesting also because I gather, you know, we're talking about sort of the beginning of, you know, the food, the whole thing with what losing weight and that, but also obviously was the beginning of that really disgustingly processed food that that ad men like this were pushing, you know, like later on with the can, with the
that
well,
they
purple.
Just last week they just did Cool Whip. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago they were doing Cool Whip? And
very
now we've
astute.
Got now we've got this thing.
This whole
and
thing of you know, convenience.
You're talking
you know?
About Megan and the cranberry that came out of the can.
Yeah,
that was her Thanksgiving. The modern housewife.
Because I'm sure up to the I don't know. I mean, you know, but it used to be women would cook more, but this is kind of the start of this really. Food just being processed.
Yeah,
and we're seeing this every week.
And it's interesting, you know, one of the reasons why we have a society that we have 30% of us are obese, 30% of us are overweight, and you see the processed food starting in the 60s.
Yeah,
that's
what I think
is
kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I told you last week, my dad was like, it was the beginning of the end.
It's a good story.
Because the hippies, they ruined it.
Yes.
You know, color-wise, again, seeing the drab, lots of greens and blues throughout this, and then again, very smart with the placement of the reds.
Yeah.
So you have like a red ashtray at Weight Watchers. You have at the apartment when she comes in, you see the big red background.
Yeah.
But it opens with the red Tornado.
Yeah, there
you
was
know,
that. And, you know,
the ad that Dawn's looking through.
And to close it, at the end of Thanksgiving dinner, Betty's wearing red.
Very red.
It's like, whoa, that was such a weird, bold
And, of course, the devil, the snowball's chance in hell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all really smart stuff.
Just interesting choice for a Thanksgiving dinner, and they really, the lips were red. I mean, everything was.
What do you guys think of Betty's husband and talking about Rockefeller and saying, quote, I bet on the wrong horse, and I ended up with nothing.
Yeah, and I thought she took that internally.
Yeah.
That's, you know, she's
well,
thinking
you remember,
of herself
you,
there.
You remember you when she and Don finally split, it was at the time where her husband now was saying that I'm going to get on this new campaign and things are looking up and we're going to, you know, I have all this stuff planned. And then now you're at this point where, well, everything didn't really work out for him and they're kind of at a crossroads. So I think that stress is, I mean, mixed with Don trying to deal with, you know, their stress between the kids with Don and with her. And then, of course, his campaign suffering. I think that's where she's getting all of her stress and
tension. But, you know, guys, I jumped ship for nothing. Meaning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what did the mother-in-law say? You could have married her for sex
exactly,
a few episodes ago.
Uh-huh.
You
could have
had
that
anyway.
Yeah.
And now he's coming to the conclusion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think symbolically.
Yeah, absolutely.
You saw
it on.
You saw it too in his response of like, where are they? They're supposed to be out front. And then finally, you just see his impatience and his overall disinterest with dealing with the kids and dealing with this broken marriage that he's now kind of working off of with Betty.
Well, here's a question I have for you guys. Betty, for the first time, when we first met her with Don back in the day, she was just this really pretty face who just seemed to add nothing to his life other than just being pretty.
Right.
And she, when he's talking about, when her husband's talking about the Rockefeller campaign, she offers him a lot of advice.
I was just going to speak to that.
Okay,
because
so tell me.
It's the advice. It's almost like the stuff she's learning at Weight Watchers. She's assimilating that, interpreting that, and she's bringing that kind of psychology. And because she didn't do it in the first marriage, she's trying to be more of a partner in this one.
So showing some growth.
Yes, exactly. I think that's what it's
doing.
I'm going to jump that because here's the thing. I think Betty's done that throughout her whole life.
What's that?
I think spew back whatever she's learned. Whatever immediate thing she's taken in, because she doesn't get out into the world, she feels like now she's knowledgeable, and she tries to spew that back to whoever will listen. Don just never listens, as we know, and Megan's learned this. He's not an easy guy to talk to, as they joked last episode.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, fortunately this guy is willing to listen, but she has no thoughts and opinions of her own. It's just whatever she can spew.
She's like a tabula rasa. Yeah, whatever.
Got by on her looks, which is, I think you see that a lot.
That's what happens.
With guys and girls.
So now that she can't rely on those looks, she's trying to fill up something else.
But you know, but do you think that she made any positive impact with him?
Well, from his look, I would say, yeah. I mean, I think he was just impressed that she made an effort and that she actually said something that was of value to him, and that it was, you know, that he was touched by it.
Do you think, in the strange way, that putting on the weight is also some attempt from her to kind of have people see her beyond her looks? I mean, I know is it kind of in a weird way she is trying to validate?
No, I think it's more on the nose of someone who gets what happens with a lot of that kind of personality. Yeah. Yeah. They get married and then they're bored and they let themselves go.
Because her husband's not kind of demanding for her to... Because she obviously felt more pressure to look thin when she was married to Don. Yeah. I mean, she felt more like the wife that had to look good. You know, going
maybe.
To things.
I also think
maybe the metabolism went. That happened.
That's
too.
True. But I think once she married him, I think she all that stuff was unresolved with, you know, the failure of the first one and all that other stuff. But finally, I think she just couldn't keep it together anymore, and it all started eating her. So she started eating something else. Mm.
What do you guys think of the son's drawing of? It's a whale harpooned.
Yeah.
You see the red coming out of blood, but it's the whale smiling.
It's the whale. Yeah. Why is he smiling?
Yeah.
Because nobody that big could smile.
And being harpooned.
And harpooned, exactly.
So why was he smiling?
Because the kid drew it, I think. But what I'm saying is she couldn't fathom a whale who's being harpooned being smiling. Mm-hmm. She can't. First of all, there's the whole thing about it being a whale.
There's no deeper level of the kid doing that. I mean, you know, they always say kids, when they draw things, there's a deeper meaning to what they're drawing. Well, and clearly he's not around half like normal environments with both houses.
Oh, you're suggesting that he's a smiling whale who's being
harpooned. I think there's some kind of juxtaposition.
Trouble with the kid.
I think that combined with the accidental note on the back from Don is that the way of showing just the strain of
Listen, tell the audience the note. Just remind people.
The note was just something. It was something about.
It said, "I went out to buy a light bulb. When I get back, I'll be able to see you better. Love, Dawn." Yeah. And he wrote it to Megan, and Betty, his former wife, got to read that. I
mean, and you wouldn't really want to see her because she's a fatty.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to see Betty, but you would want to see Megan.
When she reads that, you can see. I mean, you can see her just her anger to that, and then she turns that into. Why don't you ask Megan about
Dawn's old wife
before I was married?
She can get Sally to do her passive aggressive bidding for her.
Also, by the way, you know, I mean, in this day and age, and you guys know better than I do, but, you know, it's also about, it was coming into play, okay, it's about how you interpret the art, right? You know, it's not necessarily what the artist means. So, you know, in talking about the kid and what he meant it to mean, no, at the end of the day, it's whatever Betty's interpretation of it was, and her interpretation was, oh, he drew me, I'm fat, and I'm supposed to be happy. So, and then again, that combined with that note, you know, and so it's that day and age of what does this art mean to me? That's why, you know, you have the dots in Rogers, Sterling's office, and then you have Ginsburg Ginsburg's walk in, and he's like, oh, did you connect the dots? Oh, it's supposed to mean something.
Yeah.
God knows what. So. That's my two cents.
It's not lost on me. I love the idea that the kid is just, you know, he's damaged in some way too, because it
has to be.
Yeah, a whale being harpooned is.
Oh no, I just also thought maybe because there wasn't a kid maybe wouldn't have thought. I mean, they weren't as conscious of sort of animals being. There was a lot of whaling going on still.
Generally speaking,
then, yeah.
Children aren't, but there are professions called art therapists,
right? Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what they do. They'll say, "Hey, draw a little picture,"
yeah,
and they'll go, "Mm-hmm."
A friend of mine's one. So yeah.
So this is what it means.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
That startled me.
That's my recess bell. Time to move on. Topic number two.
But before we do that, isn't it Mother's Day?
Yeah, it is Mother's Day. Today is actually Mother's Day.
If you have a skinny mother, unlike Betty,
yeah,
is that too mean?
No, the fat mothers need more, Phil.
I'm just going to distance.
All right. Yeah, come on.
I'm
going to
distance myself from Phil right now. Yeah. You go ahead. You keep going.
Who's going? Am I going?
You're going on your own.
All right. Well, I guess to Kev's point, you know, if you have a mother and you know, fat mothers need love too, get them some chocolate. Get them whatever. Get them nice gifts.
Wow.
But whatever you're going to get, and get it through Amazon, right? Because most of you guys are buying online, and it's click, click, click. It's easy.
It's
simple.
Let's face it. A lot of people thought it was next week. It's not. Yeah. It's today. You guys are already late.
So get on it.
A lot of making up to do.
So here's what so Mother's Day could be over. You might get that belated gift. Either way, you're probably shopping on Amazon. So one of the things that we have now is an Amazon affiliate program, right, John? We're very happy about this.
We're very, very happy with it.
And the thing that it is now instead of making your purchases directly on Amazon, go to AfterBuzzTV.com first. There you'll find on the home page an Amazon banner, and in fact on any page.
Yep.
So it makes it really simple, and go ahead and click that, and that'll take you to Amazon, make your purchase that way, and we get a percentage of the proceeds, which is nice.
So it doesn't cost you anything extra. You help us out, and, you know, and we're grateful for that. So please, whenever you need to buy anything, go to AfterBuzz TV first, click on the Amazon banner, buy whatever you need at Amazon, and we'll get a little thank you from Amazon. So it's nice.
It is.
All right, moving on. We were talking about how the little note that Betty saw that Don wrote to Megan, and how that spurred her on to get Sally to do her bidding, mm-hmm, to become the wedge between Megan and Don. I thought, here she is, you know, you're kind of rooting for her because, okay, she's having a hard time with this waiter. And then she uses her kid to get between these two. I was just going, damn, just when I was starting to like her. I thought it was horrible.
See, now, unfortunately, I've never really liked her. Like, I've tried to feel sorry for her in previous seasons, but especially last season and now the three episodes we've seen her in this season, she's just very conniving, and it's not... She's not a character I can really root for anymore, or have ever, for that matter. So the fact that she's trying to use her own daughter as a pawn to break up the happy marriage that Don has, it was so rewarding to see Sally kind of realize that after she tried to make some kind of commotion about it.
It was rewarding because it
rewarding because
confirmed
she
your
came
feelings
back,
about
she
her?
She came back to Betty and just was like, the way she delivered her lines, I can't remember what she said. It was something about, so how did it go when you asked Megan about Anna?
Yeah.
And she's like, it's fine. She told me about pretty much the same thing you said.
And they spoke spoke
nothing but nice things about
that,
her.
And I mean, speaking about Anna, they
so
showed
great.
The pictures. They
right.
showed the
That's
pictures,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And so, obviously, the whole point was there was supposed to be animosity. And
right.
no.
But wait,
the
you know
what?
Just guys,
yeah,
just be, John, because during the commercials, you were right. You be more specific, because this was definitely a battle between the three of them. And it's just very interesting how Sally came out of it.
Now right, because she was clearly going down the road of, Sally was going, oh, my God, what?
So you have a very immature mom, Betty,
horrible.
Who didn't develop much more than because she had her looks, it seems like.
Right, exactly. I think
and
she stopped.
And from which we see a lot. For me, the character was, I had felt she'd played herself out the first couple seasons. Leave her in the suburbs. Let's move on to new business.
Yeah.
Now that she's here, though, I do like the weight gain, and I like... Well, I'm not saying I like. I would like someone like that in my life, but
yes,
they're
doing
it's
something
good writing.
With the character.
And so, you know, we see her being a child.
Yes.
And doing this.
Petulant.
And then, John, take it from there, because you guys all had an interesting take on how it all went back and forth between the three of them.
Well, because, you know, when she hears that there was another another wife to her father before Betty. Sally wants to know more, of course, as any child would.
Yeah.
It's like she feels like she's being lied to, or what else is there? I just love the way they started it. You know, Sally not even talking to her dad. Dad says bye, and she's...
Dads get mad sometimes.
Sally doesn't even want to say anything. Bye, Dad. You know, she does the rolling of the eyes practically. And then starts laying into Megan.
Well, I love that, too, that line of, are you going to cry now? Yeah. Or are you going to make yourself cry
but
now?
But I think it's kind of scary because I think Sally is so much like her mother. And I want to see her get beyond that.
Because I think...
Because it's kind of scary to me how nasty and mean this kid can be.
I think she's both.
Yeah.
Because Dawn is a pretty cold fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she's like both of them.
Mm. And
she's got the quest for the colored pencils, which is just interesting. Yeah. You know, the colored pencils. But then... you know, let's not jump too far ahead, and let's talk about the acting scene between her.
Yeah, learning, the first one.
Yes, between her and Megan, and how to make yourself cry for a scene.
Yeah, that's going to come back. You know that's going to come back. Oh, she's going to learn.
But already did, you know. Mm-hmm. She already, you know, used it later on
when
to say.
When did she use it?
Are you going to make yourself cry?
Oh, you're going to make yourself cry?
No, I'm saying I think at some point she's going to... First of all, she's already learned how to manipulate.
Come back
in an innocent way.
It,
but now I think she's actually going to use it at some point. Not in this scene. I mean, not this episode, but other episodes. I think she's going
to And to me, she's sounding much more like a teenager than a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, but even... I mean, even precocious for a teenager.
Was she like 13 now? I think she's
12. Whatever, I don't know what she is exactly.
She is
not a little girl.
But I buy it because we know Dawn is a genius whiz kid, and she's from that DNA, and then she also has Betty's DNA. Mm-hmm. So I buy it, and again, a hell of an actress.
Yeah, she did a great job. But I was particularly impressed with the next scene when she actually goes at Megan, and they're toe-to-toe. I mean, she's holding her own against Megan. And, 100%. You know, we always talk about it's young versus the old. Even Megan, who we've been talking about the last few weeks, is about the young guard and all this other stuff, and she's part of that group. It doesn't matter how young you are, how old you are. There's always going to be somebody younger challenging
right.
you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we got to see it in a different way this time. Usually we see the older ones like Roger and Pete and things like that.
I mean, think about
Megan.
It. We've done
she's 25, whatever
we've
she
done
is.
Betty's mother-in-law
exactly.
to Betty.
Right.
Right? So there's young, old, and now Megan, Betty, and you're right, Megan, Sally.
Exactly. We saw Megan, Sally going at it. We saw, you know, Roger being taken to task by Peggy. Dawn and Ginsburg.
Yes.
So we got to see a lot of that today. And, you know, interesting they used the parallels in the elevators and stuff. You got to see it twice. But, okay, now I'm sorry, I kind of detoured. Let's get back to the Megan, Sally thing. Really interesting in that first scene when she was, you know, just throwing it all back in Megan's face. So much anger and animus about this new Anna thing. It just heaped on Megan. I'm going, wow, so quickly thrown at Megan. It should have been, why did she take the bait from Mom? She seems a little bit, I thought, why would she not question
it? Well, she's 12, but she did recover. And when she overheard what...
Sure,
was
absolutely.
That,
but because Mom said, ask Megan. And it seemed like such an obvious throw line. Like, why should I ask Megan? Why am I not asking Dad?
Mm-hmm.
Or why aren't you telling me? I thought, you know, I was like, she seemed like, why didn't she go for that?
Oh, by the way, did you see how the mother greeted her? Get your coat. From the beginning, just miserable. And it was always been that way with her.
Yeah. Go get everyone. We have to leave.
Yeah, just not ever very warm or jovial.
No.
But do you think also some of the disappointment with Sally and Megan is that Sally, I think, has looked at Megan as being, because she said, you're my friend.
So
it's sort of in a way she kind of holds her up to being a better mother role than Betty.
And I
think that was that whole disappointment of like, you lied to me and you didn't confide in me.
And much easier to be intimate with somebody who's not replacing your mother but is your friend even though it's your mother figure and all that kind of stuff, so they can be close and girls and, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I think she's kind of related to. Yeah. And then she was disappointed tonight because it was like, you're not my best girlfriend.
No, and you lied to me.
Actually,
your mom lied to you. You're sharper than this. That's the part where I think I would have liked a little bit more on that, like, before she'd overheard something. That's kind of an easy out to overhear it. But she's brighter, and I would think that she would know something's up and would want to question that a little bit more before she went into... She slid into Megan too quickly for me. But I love the scene. I thought they were great, and I thought the fact that she threw the words right back in Megan's face was terrific.
So tell me about when now she goes back to the mom with to Betty when she has all this knowledge.
Yeah, because she's overheard Dawn, and that, by the way, that was a great scene too with Megan and Dawn, and Megan, you know, again lying to Sally because, no, I won't say anything. But I mean, well, and of course, she has to.
And I like that with Don in the bedroom where he goes to call and he said, "Don't call her." That's what she.
Yes.
That's
what
how smart
that was
Megan
kind of a light bulb
then
for
she'll
him.
Win. She wants this.
Yeah, that's how sharp Megan is, man. She knew all, you know, okay, Sally, this whole thing. And she figured, she knew right very soon into the thing that Mom told her all this. Mom told you to ask me. She said, "So when did your mother tell you this?" So she figures all this out. Not only does she figure that out, she knows ahead. She steps ahead saying, she's just doing this to get the kid to get in between us.
Yeah.
And she has to calm Don down. Which, there you go.
And she succeeds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And finally apologizes, backs down.
In a maroon sweater.
Yeah. Backs down. And of course, you know, Sally overhears all this and now she realizes, oh, okay, I'm the pawn. So when she goes back, really? You're going to manipulate me? Watch this. Yeah. Let me show you how good I can manipulate you.
Exactly.
And what does she do with the mom?
Yeah, she basically lies to her. She says, you know, oh, yeah, no, they told me all about it, and it's fine. They showed me pictures. They spoke fondly of
it. And then she becomes really cruel, especially at the end during Thanksgiving dinner, where they finish serving the bird, and then Betty goes to eat, and they said, no, you have to wait and say grace. And Sally goes, oh, she's hungry, Bobby. just in a very cold voice.
And, she conversely wanted no food.
Yeah,
not hungry.
Exactly.
I'm okay.
But I like, you know, they had little Betty after that one scene when Sally tells her that they spoke fondly. That throw, you know, does the nice little whatever.
Oh,
she
throws. Hit.
Knock something off the table stuff like that. Again, it's all passive aggressiveness. She's just all manipulation.
Maybe we should before we jump off this topic. Let's talk about Megan and actually the show. The 1960s show, Dark Shadows.
Which is the title of this episode.
Did they have a Tim Burton tie-in for this week? I mean, what a promotion.
I mean, I'm
sure. Well, not much of a promotion when they said the whole thing sucked.
But, I'm sure
but I mean, just the name.
Let me say this. I'm sure it's no coincidence.
Yeah.
I'm sure they knew this movie was coming out. It's just perfect timing. Yeah. And it's vampires, and we're dealing with demons and devils. And But anyway, she's with... a friend, who's an actress,
Julia,
who's preparing for a role or audition, preparing to audition for a role on Dark Shadows, and Megan thinks it's a joke.
Well, I mean,
thinks it's horrible.
I always think of it too. I mean, some of the all the stuff that they're doing advertisements for as the company, Heinz and Snowball and all these things. You think of any kind of cultural references. Even stuff that's being revived for a movie, of course, they would pitch that idea of, oh, you should do an episode that ties in with the old show.
Yeah.
It'll be great for your show reference-wise. It'll be great for our movie that's coming out, and we'll make sure it comes out that week. So it's all advertising all in itself, but it's still, I mean, it makes a good plot point with Megan and her actor friend.
And again, that show was so far ahead of itself. I mean, today how many years, 40 years later, we have to get Vampire Diaries, True Blood, and every other vampire show.
Yeah.
But yet 40 years ago, there was
only one.
Dark Shadows. Mm-hmm. It was a soap opera with Barnabas Collins and vampires. Yeah. And and again, here we are in 1966, this big progressive time. That's just interesting.
Well, for me, I did, and speaking about Julia versus Megan, for me, what I really liked out of it, that Megan is just so clueless to this world of really earning a spot. You know what I mean? In the advertising world, she could just kind of was good at it and, because of Don, kind of got to a place. And rightfully so, again, she was good at it. But, the fact that she says, Julia says this to Megan, some of us has to wait tables when we're not working.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, she doesn't understand that world. She doesn't know earning it and things like that, and
she's told she's lucky, and Megan's response is I am, but the way the actress played it was anything but feeling as though she was lucky.
Well, and then of course when she says some of us have to wait tables for a living, and she's like, do you want me to apologize for how for my my position, the state I'm in? I'm not going to,
but then she says she's sorry.
Yeah,
right afterwards, but I don't know how much of it that
I mean, do I have to apologize for owning AfterBuzz that's lost about $500,000?
Yes. You have apologize
you might have to
everybody,
to.
Kevin.
You know what? How about you can help us with
how
that,
How can
guys?
We help?
You can just go to iTunes.
Okay. if you would do that, if you could just go to iTunes for us, that would be a tremendous help, because what really helps us is rating and commenting on us on the
if
iTunes.
You go to, yes, if you go, to,
go
iTunes
to iTunes
and you go iTunes and you go to the podcast section, you go to AfterBuzz TV Mad Men. You'll come upon our humble show. And I'm proud to say that we almost have a 5-star rating. Yeah. You guys have been great.
Yes, and thank you so much for those of you who have taken the time to do so. We really appreciate it, and your comments are great and very helpful to us.
And we need them to keep coming. You know, at the end of the day, although we do video and we know the video is the future, audio is where it's at. We get over 1 million downloads now a week from over 25 different countries. Mm-hmm. And the bulk of it comes from iTunes. And the more you rate and comment, the better our standing is with iTunes. So please, and by the way,
and
criticism, before that,
beg
questions,
pardon.
Comments, even criticisms, you know, we yeah. read them. And, you know, for a fact, a lot of people have said, it's like, hey, guys, I love your show. I know you're excited, but you talk over each other. And that's a great note. And so, and again, just the more of that, the better. And as John was about to say about the friendship, because this is important too.
Tell a friend. Tell
Please.
A friend.
Yeah.
Bring him in. Tell want him to be part of the conversation.
Tell a friend about okay. tell a friend about AfterBuzz. We do 50 different shows. And if your friends also shop at Amazon, well, hell, have them go to AfterBuzzTV.com. Go to that banner. Click on it. And buy from there, because all of your... all of it helps. We get a little kickback, and it'll
keep the lights on,
as we say.
So Roger has to deal with Manischewitz. He's got... I cannot believe bold they were. I'm just going, well, I mean, jaw-dropping. It's like, whoa, what did he say? Did he say that? Did he just say that? He did say that, didn't he?
Well, I liked Cooper's bit where he said, where he's talking about Pete with his interview.
Right.
Mr. Campbell's good for our business, but this client needs
your finesse.
Your finesse.
Finesse. That's how he couches.
Let's not forget, I love the scene where he's going, but you know we're divorced. He's talking, yeah. he's saying, but yeah. you know we're divorced. And then he says, no, you mean I'm divorced from this, we're getting divorced the second wife. And yeah. Robert Morse just goes,
already?
I love that scene. It was just yeah. so. Just
like, how do you not know I'm getting a divorce?
You know, backing up when they're all in the elevator.
Oh, yeah.
Again, it's that old versus young. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're a hip agency. A hep.
The world continues without us.
Mm. Yeah. And again, in the 50s, hep was hip. And in the 60s, hep became hip.
Hep tap.
And he thought he was mispronouncing it.
You know, and they're talking about the Mayflower.
Yeah.
But, man, the exchange when Roger talks to Ginsburg.
Oh, yeah, brings Ginsburg into his office.
We normal people.
But before we even get to that, just to set the stage, the whole thing about the dots and what does it mean, it's supposed to mean something. Hey, have a seat. And he sits in Roger's chair.
Oh, he sits right in Roger's, his fancy
modern
chair.
Roger's like, okay. It goes to the couch and everything, and not going to let that interfere or interrupt what I need to do here. So he sits him down, and then he starts with the...
He mentions Manischewitz, and Ginsburg's Greeks right away. He goes, "Oh, you assume I'm Jewish."
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, and he said to him, he's like, you know, and the product is cheap, so you relate,
naturally.
To that as well.
Naturally.
Yeah. Cheap naturally.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's like, wow, geez. Yeah. That's finesse for you.
And you have that great moment too. Of again, this is the fourth time we've seen Roger reach into his pocket and pull out bribe money.
Okay. Here's the thing. I want you guys' opinions on this, and just hear me out so I can lay this out for you.
Okay.
Now, we know that the women are treated like crap in the 60s. We've seen it. But we are seeing some growth with them. Okay?
Sure.
We haven't touched much upon the blacks anymore since we've gotten away from Don, the secretary, at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're dealing with Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of Peggy's exchange with Roger...
Yes.
I feel like Peggy stood her ground better against Roger. Or in fact, Roger was more respectful there. It seemed like, at least by this episode, that being a girl is better than being Jewish. It seemed like he got off for a couple hundred bucks.
As long as you're a girl who's not Jewish.
What's that?
As long as you're a girl who's not Jewish.
Right.
Yeah.
But did it seem that way to you guys? If you replay... Just wait. Yeah. If you replay in your head, the exchange between Roger and Peggy, mm-hmm. when he needed to bribe her, and the exchange between Ginsburg and
Ginsburg and Roger.
Ginsburg and Roger.
Beg your pardon. Okay.
So, you guys think about both of those exchanges, and it seems like Peggy did better.
Sure.
And it wasn't because Peggy was better. It seemed like he was more yielding to Peggy.
She also got more money. I think she got $400.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So I'm thinking, are in this world, are...
Well, he certainly values Peggy more. Is it because
Peggy's
she's a woman? Because she's been there longer. I mean,
you think
I
that's
think
just it?
I think
though?
It's all tied in. I don't think you can. I don't think you can extricate the two. I think it is because she's been there longer. I think it is because he's Jewish. I think he does value Peggy. Yes, because she's been there longer. Yes, I think he values her as a woman over him as a Jew.
Well, I also think he hired Ginsburg as the token. I don't think Peggy got her job as a token woman. I don't think they were thinking at that point that they were going to employ
a
woman.
They did hire
so
him.
She really earned
Jew,
that
remember?
Job. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Ginsburg doesn't really have a lot of respect yet because he was hired as the token Jew.
Yeah.
So especially Roger was very much about, we got to hire the Jew. Because he doesn't have any respect for her, whereas for Peggy, she kind of earned her role.
I think it's clear he doesn't have a lot more respect for her.
Not a lot. It's still a woman. I mean, they're still low.
Yeah.
But my guess is Matt Weiner was making a statement that even Jewish people
that.
Are even, that's how low they were, that they even were lower than the females.
Yeah. I would agree.
Because we're seeing Megan grow. We're seeing that. We're not seeing it with the Jewish people, although we're seeing Ginsburg be an absolute rock star.
Yeah, with his
with
ability.
With his talent.
Yeah. Well, you're getting the off-the-cuff racist remarks about Jewish people, especially with the wine, where it's like they make wine for Jews and now they want to sell it to normal people.
Yeah.
And cheap, that's natural for you.
Well, can we talk about Don and Ginsburg?
Yes.
I thought that was,
that was
old and new once again at it.
Yeah, but before we go to that, because we're still on the story thing, let's go to the dinner. The dinner that they had, dinner.
Sorry.
Okay, they're at the sales dinner. He's convinced Jane to come out with him. She's only going to do it because she wants the apartment. He agrees to that. He says, Roger's really good at just giving anybody what they want, especially when it's money. But he knows in the end he'll come out ahead.
Yeah.
So they're at the dinner, and they're having the little tete-a-tete and the fun, small talk and, charming and all that stuff. And this is where Roger's finesse really comes in. Because he is a lot of finesse, a lot of charm there. He's really good at it. Until the sun comes.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean the sun is S-O-N.
Yeah.
And wow, that he looked like Roger 20 years ago. I mean, that's what he reminded me of. He's already making the moves on Jane.
When I was her age, I rode a tramp steamer from Bar Harbor to Hilton Head.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Didn't you get that feeling that, it's like, don't you think he recognized Roger and recognized himself and the kid? No? Anybody?
I didn't get that feeling, but that doesn't mean I'm not right.
I saw his, his idea of a threat in him. I don't know if he saw himself, but he certainly saw a threat of...
Do you think it was just a male ego thing? He was a young guy. He's obviously flirting with, even though they're not married anymore, there's still that kind of possessiveness thing, which I think led to Roger's action later of
absolutely.
Taking possession again
of
Jane.
But John may be onto something, because remember... Roger's second generation. It was his dad that built the business. Now he's meeting with the father of the Manischewitz company, and in comes the son.
Mm. Yeah, and you're right. He said you came in a steam truck. Now look at you now. So he knows that world.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they have the yachts in common too.
What's that?
The yachts. They're both interested in yachts.
Yeah. I think you're right, John.
So.
Well, I did love how he asked what boat do you have, and they never answered.
He never answers. Yeah, but I completely agree with you. The reason why the whole thing happened with Jane afterwards was because he saw somebody else paying attention to her.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Someone younger and someone.
And even though he's they're getting divorced, and he made sure everybody knew it. Well, it was clear between he and Jane and all that kind of stuff.
But then how sad was that for Jane?
It was really sad, and she tells him, I started to feel so sorry for this woman.
Like, she sort of said, and then she just acquiesced.
No backbone, no spine. And you wonder, okay, now that's that woman. Now you wonder a more contemporary woman, and we've talked about Jane being in that middle zone, not really being the old school, not being the young school. What would Megan have done? Would Megan been able to stand up and say no?
I'm sure she would have. I think she would have been more likely to say no.
Yeah. Most likely,
I think so.
Yeah, because Jane obviously knew this wasn't rekindling their
relationship.
Yeah, she knew what it was all about.
And either she was just really lonely, allowed herself to do that. And then just so tragic, the next morning, it's finally the light, and you see that the boxes, she hasn't moved in, and the place is just... She can't live there.
She says, you've ruined it now.
You've ruined it all.
You've ruined it.
I just go, man.
I know.
Man, why did you... Why
did you let it happen?
Exactly. If you knew going in, you even know that moment.
Well.
Wait.
Well, he's amazing. As
yeah,
a
he's
terrific.
He's
and
amazing.
And remember
yeah.
the time.
Yeah.
And she was. By the way, she was also very hesitant to do this. I mean, she right off the bat said, "You know, take Joni. She's professional."
Yeah.
As she says.
But so. She wanted an apartment out of it. So.
Yeah.
Which is that was her currency. And that's what she was able to get out of it. Mm-hmm. But
didn't even
not.
Get that.
And it was out of the line she said, "You get everything you want."
You want, yeah.
And in Roger's mind, he doesn't.
Nope.
No. Nobody but does.
Nope. Well, and it was interesting to say that about Joni because deep down she knows that if there's anyone that this guy loves, it's Joni.
It's Joni, mm-hmm. yeah. So, and she obviously is aware of that on some level.
Yeah.
Wow. So, okay.
And how amazing is Joni with Dawn?
Oh, yeah. She's good with everybody, man. She's except for the hubby. But
well, anyway. She was at the end.
Yeah, that's true, finally. So, but yeah, she's really savvy. She's really got it going on. So was there anything more with Roger and that? I think we've exhausted that. They finally get the gig, don't they? No. I thought the whatever, I don't know who came up with the bus. I'm assuming it was Ginsburg. That was an interesting little pitch.
Yeah, no, they did get the pitch because he came back and said they bought it.
How about the Man of Shepherds guy that called him out and was like, did you just come up with that?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, we had a couple people.
Yeah, we just had my people. Just, you know. And again, so just, you know, bobbing and weaving easily just, effortless the way he does those things. Really well done.
Yeah, we're
really
prepared, well and we wanted to show you what we were thinking about.
Right.
Go with us or not, we have an idea.
All right, so that leads us to Dawn. We have to get into the Dawn Ginsburg thing. So the whole thing at the top with the car, and he sees that Ginsburg is making some inroads.
And by the way, you know, the you guys, check out the 66 Tornado.
Very nice.
Jay Leno owns one.
What is it? Who made it?
Made by Oldsmobile.
Oh, it was old?
Okay.
It's actually front-wheel drive, which was, you know, unheard of for a muscle car.
Right.
And if you check it out, you guys, just if you Google, Bing, the 1966 Oldsmobile Toronado, it's an amazing-looking, futuristic car.
Yeah.
Pop-up lights. I actually looked into buying one a few years ago. It's just that L.A., it's L.A. For L.A. traffic. I hate having a big car.
It's like a vintage car now because it's
sort of
60s.
Course.
I mean, what would have stopped in the 60s?
But actually, they made the Toronado into the 80s.
They did?
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was like
that particular
Buick
style.
Riviera was very similar to it.
Gotcha.
But I'm saying the style of the 66 is crazy. And it's very hot and very modern, very futuristic. And, of course, bright red.
Yeah. And Ginsburg's name is on it.
That's the most
representing
important thing.
The new.
The most important thing is
it's
new guard.
And here's the other thing. It's not Peggy's. He points out it's not Peggy's. Well, she really was hit by the Hind thing. But more than anything, what he's speaking to is Peggy's kind of his protege.
Mm.
And she's not. It's somebody else.
He's seeing this new threat coming.
Exactly.
Especially when he sees his folder of.
That's right. And there's no way Peggy could usurp his power because she's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
But who warned Peggy? Remember when Peggy first interviewed Ginsburg? Who was the one that warned Peggy that you wouldn't hire someone that's going to be that good because they will be competition?
Well, I think that was one of her colleagues.
But
one of her colleagues
true.
Said
yeah.
I can't remember which one said it.
She sort of wasn't afraid of it,
but it's
kind of coming
by
true.
By the way, it's classic office politics, but I would expect a Catholic like Peggy to do no less than what she did, which is just but he'll be good to work with. He'll be good. Okay, good.
Isn't it good for this?
But someone more business savvy.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many jobs in Hollywood that I've not gotten because they knew that I was going to threaten them. So it happens
there you go.
All the time.
So there's the ticking time bomb. You got Don seeing Ginsburg's name on the stuff. Then you see Don looking at the private folder of Ginsburg's, all his ideas, and being kind of impressed by them.
It kills him the fact that he laughs.
He laughs
finds some of
Ginsburg's
them funny.
Stuff.
On a Saturday and dressed casually.
Yeah.
Casual
Dawn. Plain clothes Dawn in
so
this episode.
So it brings him into the office. We haven't seen him come into the office, or if he's in the office, he's not even working, but to have him be there on a weekend.
Yeah.
And he was bored.
He was, yeah.
And he was bored, so he was basically just trying to get away from the house.
That, but I'm also thinking he sees this, and he's like, there's a threat here, and I'm bored here. And he's trying to do work, and it's like half-assed. What the hell is he talking into the recorder for? And he comes up with this thing. And when he pitches the ideas, there's kind of mixed reactions.
They're kind of lame. It's kind of soft. You see him losing it. I mean, just him and the dictaphone. and coming up with a snowball's chance in hell. It was like, nah. Yeah. But it wasn't this groundbreaking idea like he always
like he's had before. And, and then when Ginsburg says, oh, it's impressive.
That's
really.
That's actually good.
You haven't done it for a while.
Yeah. For you to be out of the game for so long and come with something new.
It's really nice, you know, for you not to write for so long to come up with an idea that's actually good.
Jesus. What, I mean, and again, that's the stupidity of youth. I mean,
right.
Say stuff like that. But
you know, when I talked about, back up a little bit, when I talked about characters people hate.
Yeah.
Remember, it was like a police chief. It could be an Indian chief.
Even he has his own prejudice.
Things people hate. Yeah. I'm like, wow.
Or a pig.
Yeah.
And I was going, okay, was a pig? Is that a veiled reference
to the
Jewish
thing? And by the way, when Ginsburg sat in Roger's chair, it seems much deeper than him just being clueless and obnoxious. It seems symbolic.
Yeah,
that he will sit in the captain's chair one day.
Yeah, I don't think it was it certainly wasn't a conscious thing. At least I didn't read that when he sat in that. It was almost like an unaware thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is. I mean, certainly to Roger, certainly to Don, those kinds of things are more symbolic than just, oh, the guy doesn't.
Well, let me ask you this. Was he even asked to sit yet?
Yeah, he said have a seat.
Oh, Roger did say that? Because I know that's like a big thing, like most kids nowadays, too. They just kind of assume you have a seat.
Yeah.
And the whole point is, no, you have to be asked to be seated.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
But I thought it was great that he offered his, again, that recklessness of youth, that he offers his opinion beyond what he needs to and gets himself in hot water and doesn't even realize that he's insulted Don. Don says, oh, thanks, glad I could surprise you. And still doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Still is unaware. It's like, this guy's not paying attention.
What about he was quoting some poem and it was like, you need to read the rest of the poem.
I don't know the poem. Nobody unfortunately, and I didn't have time to look it up before.
This is what happens when you go up 5 minutes.
That's right. Yeah, we don't have enough time to research.
Sorry to our fans.
So not only does he when he makes the pitch in the room when they're first talking about it, but then they have an artwork put together and they show it to Pete and the other guys, his idea loses. Don's idea loses to Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
So he just for me it was like ticking. You knew Don was going to do something every step of the way. This kid's coming.
Here comes the new guard.
Like, man, I got to do something here. And what he does is leaves it in the cab. He leaves the artwork in the cab. His rationale is, I only like to pitch one idea.
It's weakness to do two.
Well,
yeah.
It's kind of right. Just to give Don a little bit of credit on this, I get the feeling that anything with Ginsburg's got nothing to do with the fact that Ginsburg's Jewish. When it comes to Don, I don't think that matters at all to him.
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
What do you think about that? Because you had, early on in the episode, you had picked up the whole anti-Semitism going back and forth.
From Don?
Just in general, the general note of the episode.
That was just the most that I had picked that up with. With Cooper as the oldest member of the company, essentially saying just the Semitic wife and talking. Yeah. It was just
you don't think it bothers Don that on those things it's Ginsburg, Jewish.
No, I get that sense.
I don't see that. I see more exactly of the new.
He
the
seems
new
very
Don
fair-minded.
That's what I'm saying.
I think it's there, but I think it's lesser.
I don't think Don takes people at. I don't think things like whether they're a woman or whether they're Jewish or whether.
But he is a product of the time, and I don't think that
he considers that.
Yeah, I think it's there. I just don't think it's on the surface where it is with Roger. He can't. It's just all over the place. But I don't think Don has it.
I think beginning of the series up till maybe season 3, you saw a lot of some of that subtle racism and sexism of the times with Don, and by now it's really starting to shed, and he's really seemed, especially when he's married to Megan, he's being a little more open-minded, so that could be there, but I just didn't pick up on that with Don. I picked it up with, especially with Roger and Cooper, and just the whole conversation about Manischewitz.
Because I think for Don, it's just the ego thing of the young kid, kind of, you know.
So
it's a competitive thing. It's not, I think, nothing to do with where.
Let's talk about. So we can be in agreement that sure, it is. It's weak to go in with two ideas. You can say that. You can argue it the other way. Your idea is so strong, you don't mind being competitive with anybody. So who knows? But it's interesting that he chose to leave it in the cab. I mean, why? Why even take it?
We're talking about him kind of being weaker throughout this whole season. Maybe he is finally being a little bit stronger, but you know, he commissioned both things to have artwork done. He should have just been like, no, we're going to go with the devil, and that's it.
Well, I'm guessing that he thought his devil idea would win until they saw it, until Pete and whomever voted the other one. So he did the artwork thinking, ah, once they see everything, I'm sure I'm going to win.
I think
so I think his hubris got to him there.
I think, also,
then when
too,
it didn't,
I think also, too, he doesn't want to show any form of insecurity to new employees, especially at the beginning where Joan said, you know, you're the creative administrator.
Yeah.
I think that was the term.
Yeah.
He's not in his old job where he was the rainmaker or client. He wasn't the guy who brought in clients. He's more of the manager of these creatives.
And he's not ready to take that role.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, who knows what was edited? Who knows what something what happened in the cab to trigger that decision?
Yeah,
to say,
exactly.
F this.
Yeah.
It's my move. You know what? Yeah. Leave that thing behind.
And he waits till it's empty, too. They say, do you need a hand? And he says, no, I'm not taking both. And then they step out, and he waits for a moment and drops it.
Can we talk about them in the elevator?
Yeah, but before we can get there, I want to finish this real quick because, you know, we're talking about him being weaker this season.
Well, passive-aggressive, too. It
yeah,
kind of
every step
me.
Of the way.
It's not just weaker. He's just become this passive-aggressive person, which is kind of something I didn't think Don was.
A lot of that we saw
and
today.
And I think even that move with the taxi thing is a passive-aggressive.
It
you
is.
Know, oh, I left it in the cab.
Because
I'm not saying he said that, but
if
oh,
he's the
sorry.
Alpha male, he would have said from the get-go, no, we're going with this one.
I was a big
four
fan.
Times he could have said that.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of the very end where it's him and Ginsburg in the elevator.
Yeah, but before we get to that, we're still talking about this because what I want to know is what do we think that's what are they doing with the character there? What are they going to show? What's the arc there? He's getting weaker because the alpha male doesn't
do
that.
Yeah, but the young guard, the alpha male, is being threatened.
I know. That's what I'm wondering. But wouldn't you assert yourself even more?
But even like Gus referring back to last week when Megan decided that, you know, he's doing this every time.
You would assert yourself more, but he's also in a quandary at home. He's in a quandary over his talents. And there's the side of him that kind of doesn't care anymore about the job, but then he's trying to rally and care. Mm-hmm.
And
you're
also seeing the younger generation and the younger employees acting out more. I mean, Ginsburg, a couple episodes ago, where they had a pitch and then he... As soon as it was done, they said it was great, and he pitched his other idea that they didn't even bring up in the meeting. Mm-hmm. They're being more outgoing, and they're certainly more assertive vocally.
Yeah, John? I'm not an argument.
It ain't over.
I know. That, but
it ain't over.
Like,
you'll be aggressive.
You see him.
But it might.
I know, but that's what I'm wondering is because you would expect that he would be aggressive first and then have that backfire and then try something else.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of life left in the show, and I think you're going to see exactly
I'm hoping so, because it was very interesting that we went down that road rather than what you would expect to see, at least in my view. It's like, why are they doing this? Why, you know, five steps along, you know, where's the guy that would take charge and go, no, we're doing this one. I'm only
doing one,
and this is the one I'm doing.
I think he did take, maybe you could call it passive-aggressive, but I think he took a little bit of charge back in the elevator with that line of, I don't care about you at all.
That's vintage Don. That was vintage Don.
That was.
But we haven't seen him for a while.
That, I mean, that's what I was going,
I feel.
Okay, where is that?
No, he said, Ginsburg says,
I feel sorry for you.
I don't think about you at all.
And Don's response is?
I don't think about you at all.
Yeah, so that's the Don we
well, and it was just so, it was
you
awesome.
You see that old Don, especially in the line before that where he says, and he's like, oh, that's my idea, and it would have been better. It's like, oh, I guess I'm lucky you work for me.
Yeah. He's just putting him in his place, letting him know.
Good
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, yeah, there you go. And the parallels, we saw a lot of, you know, we saw Sally taking on the older Megan. We saw Peggy taking on the older Roger. We saw Ginsburg taking on the older. And they each, and I love the parallel scenes with the two elevators, with Roger and Peggy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to see, Don and Ginsburg. Boy, that was totally different. Yeah.
And their outfits, you know, Ginsburg's in the plaid.
Yeah,
and,
he's
know,
crazy.
Crazy, you know, again, much more modern, and he's much more.
And even the visual of them, you know, Don being so tall and big, and then Ginsburg is kind of like, you know, and rumpled a little bit, and that was just a good look. That's a great look. So, anyway, thank you for hanging out with me on that, because I wanted to get to that point before we got to the elevator. But the elevator was a great scene.
Mm.
Loved that scene. Very well written, very sharp. And, you know, concise, nice.
Executives do need a separate elevator. That's what I did. Yeah, that's what I learned.
Yeah, Roger, that was great.
I think that was the funniest Roger line this episode.
Yeah, that was really good. That was good. Well, you know, the only thing else I wanted to talk about, we have a few minutes here, was Pete's little fantasy.
Oh, yes.
What we find was a fantasy. The scene was like, whoa, where are we going here? What's going on here? Little Rory Gilmore.
Yet another example of AMC kind of pushing their boundaries as to how far they can go. I mean, last week with the Beatles cover, which wasn't exactly the cover, and they're saying,
which we'll talk about in our special segment.
Yeah, turn the music off, and you have Ginsberg actually swearing, and they had to mute that out, but the actual performance was there. Yeah. And then, of course, little Rory Gilmore, the actress Alexis...
Liddell.
Yes. Her in just a fur coat with nothing else on.
I thought she had a little lingerie. And
just a little bit. Lower hair. Nothing up the top.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. But
enough to keep us guessing.
Girls. Yeah, exactly. Right?
Wow. But, you know, how disappointed were we when it was actually a fantasy?
I'm feeling sorry for Pete. He's kind of really...
Poor Pete.
Well, he's really fallen for this woman.
And also very consistent with his character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it was all about the New York Times article. I'm going to finally get attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when he doesn't get it...
He equivocates that attention is actually going to get him laid.
Yeah.
That's some imagination you've got.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, I mean, last week he was so assertive with his need to continue that affair.
Yeah.
I mean, I was hoping that it wouldn't be over in this little midday fantasy.
Well, is it
I'm not
over?
Sure
I'm
it
not
is
sure
because
no,
well,
it
she gave him a clue last year with a little heart, so it's not like
not over.
It's not over.
Yeah, not
it's
over.
Not,
come on.
Not and by a long shot.
When he's on the train with Howard at the end, that's bold.
Whoa,
I like that.
How bold is that?
Oh man,
how about you know?
Tell you what.
Yeah.
you spend the holiday with her, and I'll go home and screw you.
And Howard, not even thinking it's a possibility.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with that. Like, she must be, you know, like, in his mind, she mustn't be very sexual.
Oh, my God. How tragic is that?
And how typical.
That's true. How typical. Just no respect, no
just
regard.
Typical male, and just so self-absorbed.
Oh,
you know?
My God. That was just tragic. Well, I think we've exhausted our topics, and I think we've got to go to our break.
I just want to talk a little bit more about that New York Times article.
Yeah, sure.
Wasn't that kind of basically saying that this, because he thought he pitched it, from my understanding, watching it, that they were the hip advertisers, and the New York Times didn't even include them?
Yeah.
Isn't that a huge thing? And what was the Peter, Paul, and Mary? This
they
was
went,
like another.
That was another. Yeah.
And again, Peter, Paul, and Mary is, you know, mid to late 60s.
Yeah.
The totally an epitome of the 60s music scene and the late 60s music scene. You know, not Motown, not. It's that which was taking us to Woodstock and all those other places. And so to reference them, it's basically the new guard.
That's what I'm saying. So this article is about the newer guard than what they are now.
Yes.
So I thought that was quite a slap, really, because they came in they were the hot shot advertising group, and already they're old guard.
And if you take away Ginsberg and maybe Peggy, I mean, Pete doesn't represent the new guard.
No. He's the old school.
He's old school.
Yeah.
Masquerading, you know. Mm-hmm. As a young person.
Yeah. He's kind of like Jane in that sense. He's not of the old school, and he's certainly not the younger. So, all right. So, Phil, if you would, please take us to our break.
Oh, wait. What are we going to do after
Buzz
the break?
What's up?
Wait, he's wondering what we're
going to
do.
Well, you know, because, you know, you want to make sure they come back.
Yeah, we're going to do our Beatles.
Catherine, tell us what are we going to talk about?
Our special segment is the Beatles.
Oh, well, just how this show continues to make news every time after the show goes on. And this was massive news this week about the use of the Beatles song. So, incredible.
We'll come back and talk about it.
Nice.
After Buzz TV.
Hi, I was once like you, a lazy, angry loner whose only joy was watching TV and surfing the net. And like you, after I'd see one of my favorite TV shows, I'd be so excited and have so many questions that I'd actually have to talk to my douchebag coworkers about it at the water cooler. Then I discovered AfterBuzzTV.com. AfterBuzz TV produces after-show webcasts and podcasts for TV series of all kinds. Like post-game wrap-up shows for all your favorite TV shows. AfterBuzz TV hosts are industry insiders who break down episodes of shows, take calls from fans, and interview cast and crew from each series with over 60 different aftershows, from Boardwalk Empire to American Idol to Vampire Diaries to Real Housewives and more. Now, after a night of TV, I can ignore my stupid coworkers, who I hate, and go straight to my desk and watch or listen to all my favorite AfterBuzz TV aftershows and have all the TV fan interaction I need. Thank you, AfterBuzz TV.
AfterBuzz TV. What do you want to buzz about?
All right, we are back, and as our resident journalist, I'm going to turn this over to you. Talk to us about the news that Mad Men made with the Beatles.
Extraordinary. Like I said, this show, since the beginning, I think this season more than any of the past seasons, episode by episode, there has been such a flow on from the first one with the Zooby-Dooby-Doo and, you know, even that Howard Johnson made massive news. And then this was even bigger again because we had a Beatles song that was used in last week's episode.
Very rare.
Very rare. Well, extremely rare. Tomorrow Never Knows was used at the end of the episode from the Revolver album because Dom was kind of trying to catch up with the youth. And this was just unprecedented because basically, you know, well, first of all, it was reported that something has never been licensed like this from the Beatles and extremely expensive to license any Beatles songs, as they mentioned in the in the show. So it's reported that they must have paid up to about $250,000 to just get these minute or minute and a half of song. I mean, and it is pretty unprecedented. It was used, apparently, this song back in the 60s when there was a Beatles cartoon. Does anyone remember a Beatles cartoon?
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. I mean, I never saw it, but I do remember they did it.
Yeah, so that was it. But then Matthew Weiner just said that he really felt that he needed to do this because Beatles is so iconic.
So relevant.
And so relevant to this era. And he really had to do a lot to get this song even. Basically, he had to get, like, script approval, and he almost had to construct the episode last
week.
Which
he normally does not.
He would never let anyone read his script. And this was what's incredible.
Or even do the story. He doesn't even tell them the story.
Tell them the storyline. And basically, he had to do this to Apple, who owns the licensing for the Beatles songs. He had to agree to that, which is something that he would never do, just to be able to get this song
You guys think it's a worthwhile investment?
Well, the fact that they've gotten so much press out of it, I don't know whether that was the intention, but the fact that this has just created... New York Times did a huge article, LA Times did a huge article. I mean, just the talk and the chatter about this.
Then, it was
from that point of view, I don't know if that was the intentional. I think for Matthew Weiner, it was just about being artistic and that the fact I need to get the Beatles.
Well, that's what I'm asking more. Yeah. Artistically, do you think it paid off? Because for me, I totally think it did.
Yeah.
Revolver was the album that bridge the Beatles from being bubblegum into what they grew to from 66 to 69. Of course, it fits perfectly with the show. And I thought last week's episode was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I thought they picked the perfect song. So for me, I love when producers and networks will write the check for something. You know, I was talking to someone from HBO. I'm like, how the hell did you write a check for John Adams?
All
of that, because where do you get your money back, really? I mean, they said, you know, we really kind of don't, but we monetize in other ways. It gives us respectability, and you know, there's other ways, and so. But
you have more and more actors wanting to work for HBO, so then you do make your money from it, just not directly necessarily.
You know, the old speaking of old new guard, old guard doesn't get that. They're all, I'm from Mississippi, the show me state. They want money right in their hand. But, you know, the newer guard understands that there's such a value to the extra publicity or just something really very cool creatively.
And I think essential for, you know, that scene with Don to be playing Revolver.
No other band would have
fit it into that scene. I mean, if you had a Beatles-like band, it just would not have worked. That scene had to be.
And then Tomorrow Never Knows. Yeah. I mean, the whole meeting we were
everything
about.
Worked just perfectly. Like Weiner does on, you know, everything he does in the show. It just all connects so well. And, you know, it's funny. Who would have thought, you guys, when we started watching this however many seasons ago, that we would see Don as an older man? Yeah. You know, isn't it?
It doesn't blow you away.
And, but again, I buy it because you were an old man at 40, you know, back then. Well.
We all fall old.
A little hot on the computer. Yeah.
Sorry. Hope you didn't blow anybody's ears out on that one. All right. Well, that's...
And, of course, we won't be playing any of that Beatles songs because it would be way too expensive.
Exactly.
That's true. But the other little thing about the trivia about the Beatles is the first song that was in that episode, not the first one, but the they were looking for a knockoff song that sounded like the Beatles, and they played some song. I can't remember the name of it at the moment. And everybody's listening to it and go, oh, what, who is this? You know, they, you know.
Well, actually, can I just read that?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Another hit of Beatles, a bit of Beatles trivia referenced in the episode, September in the Rain, there the Wedgwood's track that Draper and his colleagues contemplate as a substitute for an authentic Fab Four tune, is one of 15 songs the Beatles performed at a 1962 audition for Decca Records. That label turned them down, the Beatles signed with Parlophone, the rest is twisting, shouting, walrus identifying history.
There you go.
Wow.
There it is. We binged that earlier.
Nice. Bing is for doing, after all.
That's right. Speaking of doing, let's do our predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
All right, who's got anything? Here's what I hope. I hope we see more of Don, the elevator Don.
Yes, I want that Don back.
And I hope we see it start, and I hope we see him fail at it. So that there's more for him, more grist for the mill, and he can have to find a new way to, you know, be in the world. Because we're gonna see.
I mean, I think all I can see is I think you know we know that Pete and this and the mistress they're gonna roll around again.
I think
yeah,
so.
That's bound and to keep going. Yes.
And I think the overall thing is we're gonna continue to see old guard versus new guard. My prediction is that at the end of the season, old guard will win, only to, of course, be defeated
in the next season. Because it did.
Do you feel that Don and Megan's marriage is going to really... Do you think it's strong, or do you think that he's he's walking on eggshells with her?
He's made concessions.
Yes.
She's no housewife.
Yeah.
He's almost gotten what he wished for. Mm-hmm. No, I think that it's only going to get worse, the fact that... Right. She basically, when she said, yeah, I am lucky, yeah. And the fact that she can conjure tears so easily is she doesn't feel very good about her life with him. And
but
I think
wait a minute, but she said you're everything I dreamed you would be.
Right.
But he's not being himself.
Well, I know, but I think that's the problem. I think she actually is believing the...
Okay, no, but everything dreamed you would be, So imagine, John, at 26, that's the end of your dreams.
That's what I mean.
I don't think that meant that was a good thing.
Oh, so I think in her mind at the moment, it
yes,
is.
And the but the subtext is,
yeah,
she's too young for it to just end there, and that's what her father had said.
Right, and but I also
you're
think
settling
because it's the whole dream thing. Yeah, it's a dream. You're not
it's
living
not
in reality.
Real.
Yet.
That's right. Yeah. And I think the fact that on a Saturday he's in the office, yeah. And if he was in the office, you guys, and his sleeves were rolled up, and he was sketching away, I get it. But he's not. He's smoking. He's looking out the window.
He's
stretching.
He's doing.
But he's not home with his wife.
Or his kids. He
or
didn't
his
have
kids.
Anything to do with it.
So, no, I think that we're on thin ice. I think we're on thin ice all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, everything's just like that. Yeah. So, but I'm going to say that I don't think Pete's going to be with Beth. Because it's so good that Pete just fantasizes but can't have her.
Yeah.
You think
that's
the
Pete.
Main, you think
Pete doesn't get
he always
like
falls
that.
Short.
Yeah.
He does.
So they may happen, but it's gonna be a while. And it happens again, it's gonna be horrible.
But
bad's gonna be
done. No. What I say happen again is I think another role in the hay. I don't see them leaving their partners and getting married.
No, not at all.
But I see it creating trouble.
Yes.
Lots of trouble for him.
Absolutely.
Of course I love you. I'm giving up my life to be with you, aren't I?
Okay.
Very nice.
Thank you very much, Phil. All right, anybody else got any other predictions for us?
I'm just excited to see clips with Lane again. It's been a few
episodes. Oh, I can't wait.
We
it's
love
been
Lane.
Too many episodes without him.
What do we think? Do you think Betty's going to lose the weight?
By the end
probably
of the-
not. No, I don't think so.
I'd love to see her lose
I
the weight.
I hope not, but...
And I would love it, but John, it was back in that time, they generally didn't...
I know, but it would be interesting if she did, and what if she did and made a play for Don?
I know she's such an old lady now, like you said, with the
be.
House
but it would be interesting because what would that
be.
Do with the Megan Don thing? I mean, she already's trying to drive a wedge there.
It ruined it. First episode of the season in a pink house coat.
Yeah.
We're done.
All right.
No, I think she might come back. I think once she loses the baby weight, the real...
You know,
I think we might see her in a skinny dress again.
I'd heard Jenny Ray Jones is moving on to movies and all that stuff last year.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just think it's time to kind of phase that out.
Phase her out.
Well, let's let our audience know where they can find us if they want to get a hold of us.
Oh, yes. No, Twitter, follow me at JJG32.
That's easy to remember. At Undergaro.
Catherine.
I don't have a Twitter.
Okay.
But she does do the revenge after show here at After Buzz TV.
Yeah. And LA Times, right?
I love that show.
The LA Catherine, Times. How are you an LA Times writer and you don't have a Twitter? Come on. Speak of the old guard versus the new guard.
I'm still old guard.
You are
too old
guard.
Too old guard.
We got to change that.
Phil, they'll find you here, right?
They can find me here on
do
other
you have
shows.
A
no.
Well, hang on. I'm
John's
not the only
no,
one.
I'm not a journalist.
John's also old guard.
That's right.
So. Good for the old guard.
All right. So thank you very much for listening. On behalf of Josh Gardner, Phil Svitek, Catherine Tulich, and Kevin Undergaro, I'm John Comerford saying thank you much, and we'll see you next time.
Bye. From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.